So the Torah talks about Moses breaking the tablets. We just read about it on Shabbos. Moses comes down. The Jewish people appear to be worshiping the golden calf. He gets very angry, and he throws down the tablets and breaks them. At the end, he comes back down with another pair later on. It's interesting that the Torah ends, at the end of the Torah says, in the eyes of all the Jewish people, so Rashi tells us what was done in the eyes of all the Jewish people, Moses breaking the tablets. So what kind of ending is that? Like, it seems to be like an anticlimactic. The last eight verses were discussing the death of Moses and all his great accomplishments. He took the Jews, the Exodus from Egypt, the 40 years in the desert, the Red Sea, Mount Sinai, and you'll end on a climax of and Moses breaking the Luchos. What kind of ending is that to the Torah? So there are many answers, but one is, and that shows the greatness of Moses. Why is it? Because many people are willing, because imagine the scene. Moses is working his whole life. What's his dream? On doing the Torah with God. Moses doesn't know there's going to be another tablet. He's working, he's there 40 days, 40 nights, he's not eating, drinking, and he comes down, and you could say, oh, well, it's not so bad. He could, I can imagine someone writing a PhD on a thesis on something, and they know it's not right, but no one else will know about it. So, you know, intellectual, so most people would just go with it. Oh, it's a big deal if one thing doesn't work out, no one else is going to know. Moses was an Isha Emes. Moses was someone that if something wasn't right, he was willing to give up his whole life's work in order to show that, you know, you have to fight for the truth, and, you know, that's what a Jewish leader is. As the quote from, I saw a quote at the end of the Chumash here, along these lines, it says, Moses took it upon himself to shatter the tablets before their eyes. And God said, good boy, Moses, Yasha Kochacha. That's what the custom is after you get something in synagogue. It's a Yasha Kochacha, comes from here. God said, Moses, Yasha Kochacha Sheshibarta. It is not only that a leader must be able to make a momentous decision, he must be willing to destroy his life's work if necessary. Many people are able to build, but few are able to make the decision to tear down. Moses' greatness in science did not have to be accepted on faith, but his great acts were fully visible to the entire nation. That was the greatness of Moses. But either way, it deals with the breaking of the tablets. In fact, it reminds me of a comic strip I saw many years ago, about a joke about the Luchos. I must have saw it in some Israeli newspaper or comic, because I remember it in Hebrew, but I'll translate. So the story goes like this. There's a person who worked for the Ministry of Education, and he was checking, going through the different schools. He heard the different problems in certain schools and not learning that much, and he went to try to fix the problem. So he shows up in this school. It happens to be in Israel. It could have been anywhere in North America also. And he shows up to the school, and he sees one of the kids in the school. I guess, you know, fifth grader, I don't know, sixth grader, who knows. And he goes over to the child and says, Yeled, Mishi Beres Haluchos, child, who broke the tablets? So what do you want? He's a 10-year-old kid. He sees a stranger. He says, Lo ani, lo ani.
No, it wasn't me.
I didn't do it. Don't blame me. So the guy's thinking, wow, I heard they don't know what, they don't know much, but they don't even know Moses broke the tablets. What have they been teaching in this school for 8 years? He gets very upset. He runs to the teacher And he goes to the teacher. He says, you know what? I met Chaim Yanku in the hallway, and I asked him, who broke the rukas? He said, go ani, go ani. So the teacher said, you know what? I know Chaim Yanku for 8 years. He's a very honest boy. If he told you he didn't break the rukas, you could believe him. So, wow, he's saying, I know the kids don't know anything, but the teacher doesn't know that Moses broke the luchos. What's going on here? So he runs to the principal's office and says, I'm going to make a scandal, this and that. He goes through the whole story, and the principal's getting fed up with this guy. He says, you know what? Just tell me how much they cost, I'll pay you and get out of here. So the point being is, whatever happened to the broken luchos? Not where are they now, that we could get into a historical discussion. My first question is, what happened to them then? When Moses broke the tablets, did they throw them in the garbage? Did they bring them to the recycling up there on Dundas? Whatever happened to the shivrei luchos, the broken pieces of the luchos? So, there's two opinions in the Talmud. One opinion is they made a separate ark, like we have an ark we keep the Torahs in. It was a separate ark, and they put the pieces in a separate ark. And the other opinion says no. It was put together with the Aron Kodesh. It was put together with the ark.
And the curtain.
Yeah, everything, yeah. But it was put, the curtain, yeah, that's the parochas, yeah. But it was put, it's two opinions. Either were the broken pieces put together with the new tablets, you know, because Moses came down and brought down the second tablets. Mm-hmm. So were they put together with the broken tablets, or were they both stored in separate arks? Were the two arks or one? So that's a discussion in the Talmud. We assume, we have followed the opinion, there was only one ark. Mm-hmm. The broken tablets were put with the regular tablets. Mm-hmm. And what lesson do we learn from that today? Yeah, Bernie?
What happens with the ark? You were talking last week about if a chumash or something gets destroyed, but you got to bury it.
All right.
So this is the same principle as we talked about last week.
Excellent.
That's why you have to put it in the ark.
Very excellent, yeah.
That's put all your eggs in one basket.
I like that one. Very good. No, right, but right, that's something else. That's kfura burial. We'll get to that, right?
Yeah.
If the books are no good, you can't throw them in the garbage. You have to bury them, right?
No.
So the question is like this. It happens, I wouldn't say, all the time, but I would say it's not an uncommon question. Is, if you're reading the Torah on Shabbos, or whenever you're reading it, Monday, Thursday, a holiday, and you find a mistake in the Torah, it's missing some letters, has the wrong letters, whatever the problems are. So you can't read from it anymore, so people put the puzzle sefer Torah, the Torah that's not good, they put it back in the ark meanwhile. Is that okay? Because we have a principle, ma'alin bekodesh ve'ein moridin. We always go up in sanctity, we don't go down. In other words, every morning I put on first my talis, my prayer shawl, and then I put on my tefillin, my phylacteries. Because tefillin is on a higher level of kedusha, sanctity, because it has inside the tefillin are the words of the Torah. There are no words of Torah on the talis, it's just a prayer shawl. So we always go up in sanctity. So the question is, are you allowed to put a Torah that's no good together with Torahs that are good? So the rabbis say it depends on this question. Whatever happened to the original luchos? If they were put in their own ark, that means they couldn't have been put together with the full luchos. So then you can't put a no good apostle sefer Torah back in the ark. Mm-hmm. But we follow the opinion it was all put in the same ark, the broken tablets and the full tablets, and therefore we allowed to put back a no good Sefer Torah back into the ark. The question is, but why? Mm-hmm. Aren't we going down in sanctity? And the answer is no. Because a puzzle Sefer Torah has the same sanctity as a kosher one. You just can't use it to read for Kriyas HaTorah, but in terms of its Kedusha, its inherent sanctity, it's the same. How do I know that?
Can it be repaired or not?
Yeah, if you can, sometimes it can always be repaired. The question if it's worth repairing. In other words, if sometimes it's going to cost so much money, it's cheaper to write a new one. Mm-hmm. So if it can be repaired, or if you are going to repair it, mm-hmm. then you repair it. You're allowed to, mm-hmm. but if not, you have to bury it. How do I know that a puzzle Sefer Torah has the same status as a Torah itself? Because the Talmud tells us, all these books up here, the Talmud, one has to be very careful that elderly person, an elderly Torah scholar who, when they were younger, knew a lot, but when they got older, because of sickness or disease, they forgot their Torah reading, their Torah learning. You have to treat them now the same way you treated them while they were Torah scholar. How do I know that? Because the Talmud says, just like we put the broken pieces of the luchos together with the full luchos, so too, even a Torah scholar who forgot their learning, we still have to treat them appropriately.
Can a lulav and an esrog be put in a Torah in an ark?
Good question. So the answer is no, because that is a low. There is a custom some have after Sukkot is over. Why would you put it in the ark? By the one, but. After
wouldn't you just dispose of it?
Lulav and Esrog are in Kedusha, the Tashmishei Mitzvah, so while you're doing the Mitzvah, the Holy, but once Sukkot is over, you could throw them out. However, you have to throw them out appropriately. So some of it could custom, because you asked me about the Ark, they throw the Lulav on top of the Ark, and they wait until Erev Pesach, the day before Passover, and when they burn the chametz, they burn the lulav. That's a some have a custom. Others just put them in plastic and then throw them out. And lul and Ezra.
They had Ziploc bags in those days.
Good one.
Yeah.
And yeah. Edith, as Edith said quite cogently, the esrogim people eat. I mean, they don't usually eat them. There's a tradition that a pregnant woman eats from the esrog after Sukkot. It's Jewish folklore. She takes a bite out of the esrog.
Mm-hmm.
Or some, maybe or not, some bring a custom like that. Mm-hmm. But why specifically a pregnant woman eats from... Anyone can do it. But there's a special custom a pregnant woman eats from the esrog tree. And the answer is because we have a tradition, we have different traditions, but this is one of them, that what type of tree was in the Garden of Eden? The Christians say it was an apple, but that's not a Jewish, the Jews don't say that. Jews say it was some type of citrus, or one opinion is, some say it was grapes, but the one I'm focusing on tonight now, some say it was an esrog.
Yeah.
And therefore, what's the significance of an esrog?
It's a lemon.
Yeah. So, it's right. It's like a lemon, except when I went to Metro, the lemons were selling 3 for $1.
Yeah.
When I tried to buy a 3 esrogum for $1, it didn't work. They wanted $150 an esrog or more.
Oh, boy.
So what happens is as follows.
You buy them at Metro, the
etrog? No, they don't sell them there.
Where do you buy them?
They get them in from, at the synagogue, they bring them in from Israel usually. Or it doesn't have to be Israel, from Morocco. You know, it has to be
a tree?
Yeah, it has to be a warm climate. Yeah, they look like lemons. They go on trees, except they have to be, you know, specially made, you know, for the mitzvah of Esrog. So the Bible tells us because of the sin of, because Eve sinned in the Garden of Eden, that she ate from the tree when she wasn't supposed to, so therefore women today suffer the pain of childbirth. So I know something about childbirth, not that much since I'm a man, even though there was a movie out many years ago, I think called Junior, where it was about a man becoming pregnant or something. And I saw it actually, and since then, I think I've been at some counters in, I don't know, Fortino's, Metro, somewhere, and I see, you know, you can't help noticing the ridiculous magazines there. So I just see, sometimes I take a glimpse of the headlines, and one was this man becoming pregnant. I didn't know exactly what it was all about. Either way, that was probably those were the more crazy ones. I don't know if it was like they did a sex thing. I wasn't buying it.
Was there ever a female impersonator that had the vagina redone and
made the penis out of it? Yeah, it had
sexual intercourse and the baby was born from it. That's
a good question. I know things about in Judaism we don't recognize sex change. So we don't. Yeah. In other words, if someone is a man and he does a sex change operation, he's still a man.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not saying physically he's a man, but Jewish law doesn't. We don't recognize sex change. In fact, it'd be an interesting question.
What year did Rashi discuss
that? In fact, some would say if a man does a sex change and he looks like a woman and then he lives with a man, so he committed an act of homosexuality. Because he's really a man, not a woman.
But you can't do that either.
Yeah, no.
Homosexuals are not recognized in the Torah.
Right, no, they are recognized. Right. But
they're not recognized as like a regular man and a regular
woman.
Right,
no, it's recognized, you know, a person, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's genetic, whether it's, you know, society doesn't, either way, right, it's not recognized as...
He's a hermaphrodite genetically. A hermaphrodite.
Yeah, that person was born that way, you mean?
Yeah.
You mean it's a different, they have both qualities, you mean?
What does the Bible say about that?
It's a good question. No, the Bible doesn't discuss it, the Talmud does. That's how all these books discuss everything. So it depends, you know, there's a lot of details that depends on what, you know, then what that person is. You see, you try to, I guess, obviously, you work with doctors, you see what is it mostly, and then you try to make them that, you know. But there is a concept of someone who we don't know. But it's even in the Talmud has a lot of discussions on it, both types. The Talmud discusses one who doesn't have any organs and one who has both organs, male and female. So Gemara discusses all this stuff. It's nothing new under the sun. It's just a matter of applying the principles. What?
What about a woman who has a hysterectomy?
Yeah, so but that she's still a woman. Like, what's the question? Yeah.
Okay.
Right, so in terms of that, so why was I bringing this up? Oh yeah, but the Esrog, yeah. So because Eve sinned with the Esrog tree, so the Bible says women are punished with the pain of childbirth. So what do you do? Yeah. So 8 days this Esrog smells and looks delicious, but you can't eat it because it's Sukkos. Uh-huh. So right after Sukkos is over, the pregnant woman takes the Esrog and takes a bayav and says, God, if I was in the Garden of Eden, I wouldn't have eaten from it. So now take it easy on me on childbirth. That's the custom of a pregnant woman eating from an Esrog after Sukkos. You like that one? Yeah, go on.
So, for Sukkot, we have the Mulam and the Esrog.
Lulav and Esrog, the Hadassim, the Ravos.
Wait. Lulav and Esrog. And that came from then Adam and Eve, because there was a lemon tree that Eve was talking about. That she
Esrog tree. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, an Esrog tree. So that's where it came, that's how the holiday of Sukkot got started, right?
No, well, Sukkot, that's how it was Sukkot, but that's where the Esrog, the Esrog has its roots in the garden.
Where the Esrog came from, I'm saying.
Though. Correct.
Yeah.
That is true. The Esrog has its root, has its roots in the Garden of Eden.
Where was the Garden of Eden?
It's a good question.
Mesopotamia?
Yeah, somewhere maybe. Israel, yeah.
Well, that's all sandy desert.
I know.
How long did they have garden? That's a good question.
Jimi Hendrix. You ever hear the musical artist Jimi Hendrix?
Yeah, I heard of him. What about him?
He did a song in 1962 in a Garden of Eden baby.
Garden of Eden, baby?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I guess
he was stoned on LSD.
I guess he learned the Bible when he was stoned.
Yeah, that's right, when he was stoned.
It was 1968, Bernie.
68? Yeah. Yeah, 68. No, not 68. Because the Beatles wrote in 63 or 64, but at the same time as the Beatles.
I know, but it wasn't 62, but it wasn't that long ago.